Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Hola, buenos dias. And to Jim Harbaugh, we say...
Hi.
All right.
I think it would be more like...
He wasn't in a talkative mood today at all.
You know, when you hear the audio, especially in the beginning of the interview, it doesn't sound as bad as transcription.
No. It's, believe me, I listened to it live.
Well, maybe it got worse as it went on.
Okay. No, I listened to it live. It was headed for the dustbin the second it. You could just tell right off the bat, something is not right here. You could just tell right away. And I thought, geez, what's wrong? Something's not right here. Oh, well. That's, wow. Different ball game. Wow. That was different, man. Really different. Let me put it this way. When you're in the recruiting game, like these guys have to be 24/7 now, 365 days a year, you know, you really can't have anything, quote, held against you. And his personality has been something that's been called into question now. And all he did was reinforce the stereotype on a July 1st day, on a day where it should have been free, easy, and okay, we're doing fine here. And he acted as if he was before the Watergate committee being questioned by Sam Ervin. Dave in Sunbury. Hi, Dave. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Steve. Well, I heard that interview, too. You get better response out of a slug.
It was unbelievable listening to it. I have no idea what they were trying to accomplish with it. I'm talking about what Jim Harbaugh was trying to accomplish with it. I mean, Colin Cowherd is just doing his show.
And giving him upfront questions, kind of softballs. I mean, you know, what are you doing here? And, you know, that kind of a thing. He wasn't getting in depth about, you know, how many people you got in the roster, what your upcoming recruiting and stuff. He just started the basics.
It was like he sat there and got a question saying, hey, they're going through all these Hillary Clinton emails. Is one of yours in there?
Yeah.
Okay, now at this point, we're like, what are you talking about? I don't want to talk about this. All right. Instead, it was about, you know, are there times of the day where you can kind of let loose a little bit? Not exactly one where you put both your hands up expecting to get hit.
Well, like you put some bleach in, you know, starch in the... collars, and it was too much starch.
Wow. It was
bad.
That was, if I'm the Michigan publicity department, I'm just sitting there cringing saying, what can we do with this? I would say ignore it and move on.
Yeah, but after the deal about how we're trying to get rid of players also with that, doing that medical thing.
Well, that's an interesting one because it's not as if Pipkins hasn't had concussions. Andre Pipkins has. He has. He also has been medically cleared and wants to play. And to be honest with you, Dave, there isn't anything Jim Harbaugh can do with that scholarship if he got it back anyway. Because he's getting that scholarship back at the end of the season anyway. So there's nothing he can do with it right now. That's why that situation is a very odd one.
Well, the kid's a senior.
Yes.
Oh, then what's he doing? That doesn't make any sense.
None of it makes sense right now. I think you'd have to be on the inside to know how they feel about it. And it could be, It could be that the Michigan medical staff is not comfortable. That, you know, it could be as simple as that. I'll give you a good example. We had a basketball player here in the 90s who had a series of concussions. I think there were three of them.
Mm-hmm.
The last one, he barely got grazed in practice. I mean, I was standing there. He didn't get really hit hard, but he couldn't remember anything for a week. And all of us had to walk up to him and had to introduce ourselves to him. And I remember after about a week, I went up and I said, "Hey, Aaron." And he looked at me and says, "Hey, Steve, how are you?" And he was so happy he knew who I was. Well, Penn State did not clear him to play basketball again here.
No.
Well, he transferred out, but he transferred out. And Texas A&M cleared him, and he played at Texas A&M.
Yeah, well,
so you never know. That's one. But the Penn State staff would not clear him. And a medical staff has to do what they feel they are comfortable with. So one staff may not clear you because they're not comfortable doing it. Somebody else may. So I think I'll give Michigan the benefit of the doubt here until we know all the facts as to why they're not comfortable with him playing.
Well, when you were talking, some other else came into my mind. He might want also to be changing the medical staffs too from, you know what I mean?
I don't think he's done that. I think he's kept the same medical staff that was there before. To my knowledge, he's made no change in that.
Yeah, but he might be thinking about it too. You don't know.
He could. I don't know. You'd have to ask him.
Yeah, ask him. Yeah.
I mean, but he couldn't answer the questions he was given today. I doubt he's going to answer that one. So
yeah, God, we're asking the simplest of questions.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll let you go. Hang up and listen.
Thanks, Dave. 800-795-9565. That was quite a trip today. Women's basketball. You brought that up. How women's soccer is passing out women's basketball on the high school level. This is something where if you were to ask me 25 years ago, I would have told you, yeah, I mean, women's basketball will get a little bit of a footing and it'll be fine and there'll be regional pockets where it's accepted. As a big-time sport, Connecticut, Tennessee, you know, I mean, Penn State will do well in it, Ohio State, some of the Big Ten schools, you know, a few of the SEC schools. But it won't make any money. It won't make any money. And that's what I would have told you back in 1990, 25 years ago. 15 years ago, around 2000, I think I would have told you that, you know what, this has a chance to be, you know, not big, not huge, but would have a chance to have some, you know, to have a few schools across the country maybe averaging 7,000-8,000 a game. It won't make any money. It won't make any money. It'll lose you money. But I thought 15 years ago, ESPN was really jumping in full force on the women's tournament. A year later, it was 2001. I was talking to Deb Gelman. And I mentioned Deb on the show. I've known Deb for 30 years I've known Deb. And she's done so well at CBS. And she had interned with us here in State College. And I was talking to Deb, and she said, you know, CBS, you know, we're going back 14 years now. She says, and we're really thinking about making a huge bid on the women's tournament. Like, I thought, wow, that's really big. And my only question was, how could they accommodate both? You know, because it was 2001 at the time, not with the massive cable expansion we've seen now. And that was my thought, because I was talking to her down in Atlanta at the Sweet 16. And I thought, well, okay. Well, that's interesting. They're going to go full bore and make a big bid for it. Well, it turned out ESPN won the bid. And ESPN, in its initial stages, if you recall, Kevin, in the initial stages with women's basketball and the tournament, they really promoted the tournament. every third, fourth spot was an institutional spot that they put on promoting, hey, you know, the women's tournament coming in March, coming in March, coming in March. And they made a big, big deal of it. And I thought at that point women's basketball across the country would find a pretty nice toehold in American sports. It wouldn't be dominant. You know, there'd be a few games here and there that would be really, you know, must-see games. Okay. And the tournament would grow in popularity and so forth. That's what I thought 14, 15 years ago. But something's happened over the last 14 years. I don't know if you've noticed it, Kev. But what I've noticed is that as time has gone, the sport is doing no better than treading water across the country. I mean, I'm talking about no better than that. In some ways, it's fallen down a bit, lower attendance. You notice how ESPN, how they don't really promote the tournament anymore until finally you get to March and they let you know when the selection show is coming up and then they've got the tournament. I don't see them promoting the tournament. I see them promoting the Final Four, which they do a great job with Dave O'Brien, Doris Burke. But you notice even their promotion of the fact that they've got the tournament, you don't hear anything about it in their promotional announcements in December, January, really most of February, too.
They don't set it up as appointment viewing or listening event.
They really don't. Now, the Final Four they do, because the Final Four works out well. It takes place on the Sunday when the men aren't playing and takes place with the final on Tuesday, the day after the men play. So it gives them a chance, you know, for programming-wise, a really good audience. But I've noticed across the country, you know, no Pat Summits of Tennessee's come back to the pack, and they've come back to the pack in attendance. Attendance down here at Penn State. It's down at Ohio State. It's down at Michigan, although Michigan was already really down to begin with. And even UConn doesn't sell out the way they used to. And part of that's UConn's fault. I mean, UConn started charging so much for games. I mean, it was up to like 20. It was at one point at $22 a ticket. And the old Big East, they kept having the old Big East tournament in Hartford every year because they knew that was their best chance to get a moneymaker. Well, they gouged the fans. And instead of getting $15,000 for games, they were getting $6,000 for games because they were gouging the fans saying, look, you want to see the tournament? Well, guess what? You got to buy every session. And people are looking like, oh, I'm buying every session. I don't want to watch Rutgers play West Virginia. And that's the issue right there. Fans don't want to watch Rutgers play West Virginia. They do want to watch UConn and how they play. They do want to watch Notre Dame and how they play. But they don't want to watch Rutgers play West Virginia. And thus the fans in Connecticut felt gouged. Like, I got to watch Seton Hall play St. John's in order to watch UConn play Notre Dame? Really? I got to pay for something I'm not going to go to? Because that's not a game people want to watch. And that's something I've noticed over the last, dozen years or so. How about that time frame? Last dozen years. Something I thought would be at a point where there'd be many schools between 5,000 and 8,000 per game in attendance. I thought there'd be many schools across the country there. And a nice regular little TV package with all the TV platforms they have to work off of. I thought that's where they'd be today. And instead, I think they've fallen back. Attendance is down, fewer games on TV, less promotion of the tournament, a lot less promotion of the tournament.
Steve, looking at it from a high school standpoint, and this is where I think popularity of a sport has to start, is at the youth level, obviously, to get people interested by the time college rolls around and so forth. But since 2000, basketball has dropped from about 450,000 female athletes participating to right around, we'll say, 430. In that same amount of time, volleyball, this isn't even soccer now. This is volleyball, has gone from about 370,000 to almost where basketball is right now. Now, folks in this area can relate to what I'm about to say. How many high schools play basketball, girls basketball especially? How many have a girls volleyball team? That's where that number really surprised me alone, when you compare those two sports. And it really shows the trend of, and those, by the way, are sports that compete with each other in the season. And that shows a dangerous trend for basketball.
Yeah, it does. The quality of the game. There certainly are some better athletes today than maybe 25 years ago. But it is a game that has, here's the problem. Let me give you two primary problems that they have. One, the game has too many turnovers. And two, the game has too many missed layups. Now, you watch some of the games, you know, there seems to be more speed in the game. There are a lot of really good shooters in the game. And I know, but here's a big problem for women's basketball. And you hate to bring this up, but, I mean, facts are facts. It's an older fan base. And that older fan base remembers how men's basketball was played in the 50s. You know, Dolph Schayes, set shots, things like that. And they love that style of play of basketball. Below the rim, passing, shooting. Nothing wrong with loving that. But if you notice, the season ticket fan base at a lot of these games is an older fan base. You don't have, you don't really have student sections at games. They're small. It's not something that is considered to be the in thing to do on campus. Let's all go over, man. Maybe at Tennessee, maybe at UConn. But most other places, no. And what's happened is it is an older fan base. And any fan base is a great fan base. But at the same time, there is a problem when the primary portion is an older fan base, because all they do, unfortunately, as a fan base, is that they get older. And I think you know what I'm talking about here. So that's one sport where what I thought 10 to 15 years ago had a chance to really get a solid footing, and the WNBA hasn't helped at all. You would think it would help. It really hasn't. You know, it's not as if they should not be there, but at the same time, it is,
do they have a marketing issue because they don't have the marquee player? Like, and I'll use a LeBron James or a Michael Jordan in the 80s and 90s. I mean, are they missing that marketing player, a player that they can market the sport around? Or is that oversimplifying it?
Okay, what was that question again?
No, I was just saying, it seems to me that the WNBA is missing the player that they can market the sport around. The NBA has that, like right now, obviously, with LeBron, and they've had it for a certain amount of time, but it seems to me when the WNBA had a player that people knew, that an average basketball fan knew, they just didn't utilize that player to market the sport.
The WNBA is on. All right. The WNBA, for the most part, is on ESPN2.
Right.
And that was the problem that the NHL had. The NHL had, they finally got out and got into their own network, versus, which now is NBC Sportsnet. And when they did, that kind of freed them up. ESPN2 has fallen down the ladder of viewership. NBC Sportsnet's ahead of them. There are moments where Fox Sports 1's ahead of them. The WNBA doesn't help. They get like 0.2, 0.3 ratings, things like that. And marketable players, it's almost like they disappear. Diana Taurasi was absolutely a marketable player. I don't know if Griner would be a marketable player or not. She certainly brought something to the table that, you know, her ability to dunk a ball is something that no other player could bring to the table. She can. Sue Bird. You know, for example, you see the State Farm commercials with, you know, Chris Paul, Cliff Paul, Steph Curry, Sebastian Curry. They had the one with John Stockton, whatever. One of them is Sue Bird, who had played at UConn. She plays in Seattle now with the Seattle Storm. They have some marketable players, but where's the sport thriving in the WNBA? It's thriving with the Connecticut Sun. Why is the Connecticut Sun thriving? Because they have enough former UConn players there that the fans want to continue to see. I mean, you know, I don't know. I don't have answers for them. I can't help them. Because the one thing you can't do, as much as you would try to force it down somebody's throat, watch this, watch this, watch this. If the people aren't really that interested, it doesn't matter how much you promote it. And it has a body of interest, but not mass interest. And I think that's just the way it's played out, because I thought it would get much more interest over the next 15 years, and instead it's actually slid back a little bit. You know, and that's not putting the sport down. I'm just explaining the facts of the situation.
Well, here's something that should scare many female sports when you compare it to, as we talked about when this at the beginning here, women's soccer. Of all the FIFA registered youth in the United States, 40% of those are female. In high schools, 47% of all soccer players are female, and in the NCAA, 53% are female, including a 61 percentile number in Division I alone.
Right. Well, college soccer is doing well. There's no question. Women's pro soccer is in its infancy, but not doing well.
Well, so is the men's game, for that matter.
No, that's not true. MLS is doing very well.
But it's still in its infancy, is what I meant. I mean, has it been even 6 years?
MLS?
Yeah.
MLS is, I think, 15 years old.
Really?
15 to 20 years old?
I would not have guessed that.
Yeah. I mean, the fact the MLS is 22 years old.
Founded in December of 1993.
Yeah.
I had no idea it was near that old.
Now, it's taken this long, though, to really get a foothold in what's going on. Okay, but the MLS is doing fine. I mean, it's not a financial juggernaut, but it's doing fine. It's holding its own.
This year marks Sunbury Motor Company's 100th year in business, and we will be keeping the same tried and true values we've had ever since we opened our doors, guaranteeing your car buying experience will be smooth and hassle-free. No spinning a wheel for specials you don't need or want. No pushy sales staff pouncing on you as soon as you arrive. No sideshow yelling. Since we began back in 1915, we have strived to be your most trusted friend when it comes to all of your new car needs, whether that's in sales or service. We strive to offer you as many viable options as we possibly can. Sunbury Motor Company always carries a line of few other options. Auto dealers in our area can compete with. With our inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there should be no problems with finding the right vehicle to fit your needs. Our friendly and trustworthy staff is knowledgeable in all of our products and stand ready to answer all of your questions and meet all of your needs. In honor of 100 years in business, SMC is introducing the all-new Auto Club, where Sunbury Motors will pay you for every mile you drive. Be sure to ask us about our Auto Club benefits. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com. Proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to be with you on this Wednesday. We've been talking about a variety of sports today. Jim Harbaugh certainly advanced his program today with an absolutely sparkling interview on ESPN. Oh, brutal. Kevin mentioned MLS. MLS loses about $100 million a year.
Ouch.
And that's what I find interesting about it. It does lose, as a league, $100 million a year. Yet it has gained a foothold of popularity by what they've been able to do. I mean, to their credit, they've been able to do that. Their TV ratings are okay. They have had rising attendance. Last year's World Cup gave them an influx of interest. They do have their largest TV contract ever between FS1 and ESPN. Now, those are the positives. Now the negatives. Number one, the TV ratings are actually not that great. All right. Well, no, I mean, let's get something straight about that. The TV ratings for the Women's World Cup, outstanding. The ratings for the Men's World Cup, off the charts. The ratings for MLS, no. Okay? It's very simple. Now, they draw fans. For example, the New York Red Bulls faced NYCFC at Yankee Stadium on Sunday. They had a huge crowd there. I think they sold out Yankee Stadium for it, which was tremendous. So they have those moments. They have marvelous venues in MLS where there's soccer-specific stadia across the country. Columbus, Los Angeles, New York, Philadelphia, Kansas City, Dallas. All have, you know, Portland. They all have soccer-specific stadiums. San Jose, Salt Lake City. And they are beautiful. I mean, the one in Philadelphia is, you know, if you ever want to see one of them, you know, check out the one in Chester. It's like all the other ones. I mean, I've seen Columbus's, I've seen LA's, because when Penn State was practicing for the Rose Bowl, that's where they practiced, was outside of. They didn't practice on the pitch there. They practiced on the practice field outside of the of where the Galaxy play at the Home Depot Center. And so they have that. They have great ticket prices. And they do have people in the country interested in this. It's not as if they don't have interest. Now, for the MLS, they have 572 players. Seven of the 572 players earn about a third of the league's total annual payroll. The total annual payroll is about $130 million a year. Player salaries in the MLS start as low as $36,500.
Isn't that the Yankees' salary on a couple of years ago?
Huh?
What, $130 million? That's the entire league? Wasn't that what the Yankees paid a couple of years ago?
Oh, right, okay.
For their entire team?
Right.
Now, when Pele signed his contract with the Cosmos back in 1975, it was for $4.7 million. And they said at that point, hey, look, this means soccer in the U.S. has arrived. And by the way, the Cosmos, they sold out. They sold out Giant Stadium. They sold out wherever they went. The problem was nobody else sold out. The league was out of business 10 years after he signed that contract. They have a new 8-year deal to air the MLS on ESPN, Fox Sports, and Univision. And that deal is $90 million per year, which is up $18 million from the contract that expired at the end of last year. So that's a big plus for them. The ratings for the MLS on ESPN and ESPN2 didn't do that well last year. They were actually lower, their lowest since 2008. And they are exactly on par with what a WNBA rating is. So this is, it's a mixed bag, but they've had some success. They've been able to get themselves more into the consciousness, and how they go about their business with the marketing that they do. And let's go back to the fan base. What did I say about women's college basketball earlier?
Said it's an older fan base,
right? Guess what the fan base is for MLS?
I'm guessing it's the opposite.
23 to 35.
Well, look at this for numbers, Steve. Real Madrid.
And that's huge, by the way. But this is in our country.
No, I know. But I'm just saying, in soccer alone, when you're comparing European soccer with like Real Madrid, they're valued at $3.44 billion. They are the
right.
While the most valuable MLS team was the Seattle Sounders at $175 million.
And the Seattle Sounders, by the way, that right now, that is the team in MLS. That corridor of Vancouver, the Vancouver Whitecaps, the Seattle Sounders, and the Portland Timbers. That corridor draws tremendously well. Seattle averages over 40,000 fans a game at CenturyLink Field. They average over 40,000 a game. They do extremely well. Now, other places can't do as well. They don't have stadiums that seat 60,000 fans like Seattle does. Now, every time the World Cup comes up, I don't care whether it's the Men's World Cup or the Women's World Cup, it brings with it the potential excitement of what it can mean to the sport in this country. Every time the United States does well in the Women's World Cup, like they're doing now, and they're going to play in the final against either England or Japan on Sunday, or when the Men's World Cup team, which has been better, people get excited about what it can mean for the sport in this country. Well, each has done well in promoting it, but it hasn't quite deeply translated. The one area where it's deeply translated goes to the age part of it. The age part of it is the part where you have to sit back and say, you know what, that's interesting. So that's the part that you look at and say, okay, wait a minute, what is the deal here? Well, the deal is the age of the crowd. Seattle Sounders, here's the average attendance, MLS this year. Seattle Sounders averaging 40,217 per. So you didn't think I knew my MLS, did you?
I learned never to doubt you.
Orlando, averaging 34,000. Highest attendance this year, 62,510. New York City FC, they play at Yankee Stadium. They're averaging 28,000. San Jose's averaging 25,000. Toronto FC, 23,000. Portland, 21,000. LA Galaxy, 21,000. Vancouver, the Whitecaps, 21,000. Houston, 20,000. Sporting Kansas City, 20,000. Real Salt Lake, 20,000. New York Red Bulls, only 18,900. Philadelphia Union, 17,400. New England Revolution, 16,300. Chicago Fire, 15,500. Montreal Impact at 15,216. Colorado Rapids, 15,000. FC Dallas is at 14,000. Columbus Crew, 14,000. DC United at 14,000. For the league is averaging 20,900. So that would put it, the league at, I guess it would be among major sports in this country, third. Now remember, hockey and basketball, I mean, the arenas are only so big.
What was the number again on that?
20,900.
That's the average attendance.
Yes. For that, every game.
That is just about what the average attendance was for a USFL game.
Right. Now, remember, too, the capacities of some of these places. Toyota Park for the Chicago Fire is 20,000. Dick's Sporting Goods Park at Colorado in Denver, 19,600. Mapfre Stadium in Columbus, 20,145. See, they've got the right numbers here in terms of how big the attendance. Toyota Stadium in FC Dallas, I think that's actually in Frisco. Seats 20,500. It's actually in Frisco, Texas, I believe.
Yeah, the FC stands for Football Club.
So you're on top of
it. You didn't think I knew that, did you?
You're all over it. Sporting Kansas City, Sporting Park is a beautiful place, 18,500. So, I mean, they've kept their capacity in the right number. And average sports attendance in North America. For one thing, you're going to find that Canadian Football League actually does pretty well.
Oh, yeah, they do.
Much better than people realize.
Well, have you seen the size of these stadiums that they're playing these Women's World Cup games in? These are all Canadian Football League stadiums, I believe.
Yeah, they're all CFL stadiums.
I mean, they're enormous stadiums for that, even.
Right. If you look at, NFL. Number one at 67,600. Baseball, 30,458. MLS is 20,000. CFL is 27,000. NHL 17,700, NBA 17,300. But again, part of this also deals with, the size of the arena you're playing. That's why the NBA and the NFL or the NHL are not going to be as high. TV revenue. NFL has $9 billion in revenue, $5 billion from TV. Major League Baseball, $8 billion in revenue, $1.5 billion in TV. NBA is $5 billion in revenue, $930 million in TV revenue, but that will dramatically change next year when it goes to $2.6 billion. NHL, $3.3 billion in revenue, $600 million from TV. Canadian Football League is $200 million in revenue, $30 million from TV. MLS is $500 million in total revenue, $90 million. In TV. So the NHL, NBA, baseball, and football are all $3.3 billion or better in terms of total number, total revenue. MLS is 500 million, CFL's 200 million. And the TV exposure, of course, for the NFL is off the charts. I mean, everybody has it. So, and you've seen a 4% increase in attendance for the NFL, no change in Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball is actually up 46 fans per game this year. CFL has had no change. CFL is up 142 per game. MLS is up 19%. NHL's had no change. They're the same as the, you know, they still have so many sellouts. The NBA's down 1% in terms of attendance.
Speaking of the CFL, tomorrow night the Hamilton Tiger Cats and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers as week two gets underway in the CFL. Actually, yeah, that will be the start of week two.
Okay. Let's see. NFL, league stability, which is about to take a hit. Last expansion was 2002, Houston Texans. Last contraction in the NFL was 1952. That was the Dallas Texans.
Yes.
Actually played a game in Hershey.
I'm just thinking the NFL contracting. Yeah, that's not a good economical move.
Yeah. And the last relocation in the NFL was 1997. That would be what, the Tennessee Titans?
I was going to guess the Titans.
Let's see, Major League Baseball. Last expansion was 1998. The last contraction of Major League Baseball was 1899. And the last relocation would be the Montreal Expos to Washington in 2005. In the NBA, last expansion was 2004. The last contraction in the NBA was 1954. And the last relocation in the NBA was 2008. That would be the Seattle Sonics going to Oklahoma City. In the NHL, last expansion was actually, well, it says here, 91 to 2000. I guess 2000 is the last year of their last expansion, 2000. The last contraction in the NHL was 1978. That would have been the Cleveland Barons. Who merged with the Minnesota North Stars. And the last relocation in the NHL was 2011. And that would have been the Atlanta Thrashers going to Winnipeg to become the Jets. In the CFL, last expansion, 2014, a year ago. I think they added Ottawa again. 2006 was the last contraction. I think that was also Ottawa.
I believe it was.
And the last relocation was 1995, and I can't tell you who that was. Sorry.
I'm going to guess Saskatchewan.
I don't know. And MLS, last expansion, they're going to go to 20 in up to 2017. They're going to go eventually from 10 franchises to 22. They're going to put a team in Miami. There's going to be one in Atlanta coming up. The last contraction in the MLS was 2014, and believe it or not, that was the second. That was Chivas LA. The second team in Los Angeles is the one that folded. And the last relocation was 2006, and there's no way in the planet I can give you that. So, sorry. Largest cities without certain franchises. Obviously, the NFL, Los Angeles, which has been talked about. Okay. The smallest is Green Bay. They have the smallest. Okay. Major League Baseball, largest metropolitan statistical area, a.k.a. MSA. Without a Major League Baseball team is Montreal. Smallest is Milwaukee. In the NBA, the largest city in the country without the NBA is Seattle. The smallest happens to be Oklahoma City, where the Sonics moved to. The largest MSA without an NHL team is Houston. The smallest team in the league is Winnipeg in terms of population. MLS, the largest is Miami, but David Beckham's getting a team there. The smallest region they have is Salt Lake City. And the largest MSA without a team in the Canadian Football League is Quebec City. And the smallest is Regina, which is in Saskatchewan, right?
By the way, Steve, the CFL team that moved was the Baltimore Stallions that moved to Montreal in 96 to become the Alouettes. When the Cleveland Browns said they were going to move to Baltimore, they decided they could not compete, so they moved to Montreal to become the Alouettes.
Well, I'm feeling better. I hope everyone else is, too. But that is average salaries. Major League Baseball is the highest, $3.3 million. NFL, $1.9 million. NHL, $2.4 million. By the way, the Penguins got Phil Kessel today. Gigantic trade for the Penguins. Huge. Kessel is a pro's pro. You put him on the line with Sidney Crosby and watch it flourish. NBA, $5.2 million. That's going up with the new TV contract. Average CFL contract is $100,000. Average MLS contract, $200,000. But again, that's all bottled up literally into seven players. So, I mean, those are some of the economics that we're talking about. You know, like, sports has changed dramatically over the years. I mean, nothing was wet. The only teams west of the Mississippi were teams in St. Louis. And they're on the river. Now everything's different. It's all across the country. Yeah, it's huge business. That's why a show like this exists. It's huge business.
I just like saying Montreal Alouettes.
Well, remember, the Montreal Alouettes did exist for a long period of time. They just reformed from the Baltimore Stallions. The Alouettes, Vince Ferragamo played for them.
I did know that. I didn't remember it, but I did know that.
See, you're on top of your game. I mean, when it comes to fastballs right now, you're 78 in the slow gun. You're doing well.
Hey, I'm all about this. I'm all about the Rouge and the CFL. I find it intriguing to watch Canadian football.
Well, if you love football, it's the football that's on right now.
That's the other thing that it makes it really good. Well, it's the football exactly. That's on now.
Right, and that's why I thought the other day ESPN re-aired the 30 for 30 on the USFL. And Donald Trump, you know, of course, referred to it as small potatoes. He tried to move it from the spring to the fall. I think one area where the USFL caught a terrible break was when John Bassett died. He was the owner of the Tampa Bay Bandits. And I think if the USFL had stuck with the spring model, I think they had a chance to make it. But that's just me. I don't have a tower named after me. I'm not running for president. But I'm perfectly happy with my life. And my job. We shall talk to you tomorrow.